Welcome to the Surviving Grief Podcast, hosted by our grief ministry leaders at Crossroads Church. We'll be sitting down with friends as they share their powerful stories of loss and healing, and we'll hear from grief professionals and other wise people with useful tools for our own time of grief. If you're supporting someone who's grieving, you'll learn how to comfort them and walk with them on their own path to healing. Let's join the conversation.
Welcome to another episode of Surviving Grief. I'm Megs Gelfgott, and we have
Kelly Mayer.
Kelly Mayer. And today's a little bit of a teaser episode. We are talking about anxiety tied to grief specifically, right? So as a result of your grief, you are experiencing the symptoms of anxiety flaring up in your life. And so today we're going to kind of talk big picture about what is it, what's causing it, and at least some tools to start moving forward in it. But this is a really big issue of that we not only field a lot of questions on, but I think is just really growing in terms of people experiencing it on a disorienting level, where it's just really disruptive to their day-to-day life. So in the first of the year, we're actually going to be doing a further deep dive into not only the types of anxiety, but really just more comprehensive tools for how to navigate. And we're actually going to be using some book resources as well. Anxiety, the Missing Stage of Grief, a revolutionary approach to understanding and healing the impact of loss. So this is a book by Claire Bidwell Smith, and it's fantastic. And so Kelly and I are going to be kind of going through some of the high points of this book that we think is a really important resource for you. We'll, of course, add some other resources. And another really great one is, you know, there's so many writings by C.S. Lewis that we love and that are just so applicable to grief. He talks at length about the loss of his wife. But there is this quote that has just stuck with me through the early stages of grief and now is probably, I'd say, like the top quote that I recommend out to people. But this quote of, "No one ever told me that grief felt so much like fear." And I think that that's a really profound statement in the context of anxiety tied to grief. And so today we want to help you better understand, where does it come from? And more applicably, what can you do about it, right? We don't want to just acknowledge it. We want to actually move forward and progress and try to resolve some of those feelings. Just for reference also, that book that I mentioned, The Anxiety, The Missing Stage of Grief, this is a secular book, so this is not coming from a Christian perspective, but there's some really great tools in it. And so we're going to also filter, when we do a deeper dive on that, we're going to filter some of that through the lens of a relationship with Christ. And also, what does that look like healing with God in the mix coming through grief? So today, as we get into generalized anxiety and what that looks like, Kelly, did you ever have flare-ups of anxiety?
Well, that's how I found the book. I was experiencing, and I'll tell my story a little bit in the episode, but I was experiencing anxiety, and I was literally crying out to the Lord, "What is this?" I couldn't uncover the root because I don't have generalized anxiety. And I knew from previous, you know, just from general information in the world, that generalized anxiety looks like a couple of different things. It's mental, right? It's fear-based thoughts. I knew that that there's usually an object or a root to the generalized anxiety, that it can be real or imagined. It can feed on itself. I knew that it could get out of control. And I was like, I think that's what I'm feeling. Also, it's physiological. It's in our bodies. It's actually the feeling of fear. And it is horrible and uncomfortable. And it feels like your normal bodily functions just go on offline into some other weird mode. And, you know, we've all had the feeling of a little bit of anxiety, clammy hands, racing heart, shallow breathing. But generalized anxiety, people that suffer with that, that's how they feel all the time. That wasn't me. This was a situational the anxiety feelings would only happen in certain situations. And so I was literally crying out to God, "I need help." And I really cannot tell you how he did it, but this book came into my, on my feed, on Google. I don't know. I don't remember how it got to me. But I knew I was supposed to buy it. And as soon as I began reading it, everything started to make sense. So that's what we're going to talk about. The situation where you don't typically have anxiety, but you're grieving now and you're noticing, oh my, I am beginning to feel anxious. Prior to participating in the grief support group, I was just stuffing my grief. I didn't even know how to grieve. I had no idea, but I had suffered a lot of loss. My dad died very young. He was only 48. That was like 35 years ago. I had never grieved. I lost my grandmother, my great aunt, my husband, one of my best friends. And I just, all of those feelings of loss were just stuck. And then a friend of mine challenged me and said, hey, you lead healing groups at Crossroads. I think you better do your own grief group. And it really kind of shocked me. But I believed that the Lord was speaking through her. So I joined and participated in our grief group. And oh my goodness, I learned so much. And it also opened me up. Right. And so I began to be open to the healing process of dealing with all those emotions. And so all of that was stuck in the past started coming out. And the way that it was coming out for me was that I began to experience anxiety, specifically in situations where I felt like there could be more loss. So for me, that's driving on the highway and driving over bridges. It was bizarre. Like I couldn't drive on the highway. And I think what it was attached to was the recklessness and the carelessness of other drivers. Typically, we just kind of factor that in and we just be safe and we avoid people like that. It was overwhelming to me, almost to the point where I wanted to scream, don't you care about human life? You know, I just had this profound sense of the loss of life that I had suffered. Now, all of this wasn't conscious. I wasn't conscious of this when I was having the anxiety at the beginning. And then I started noticing that I was compensating. I remember picking my daughter up at the airport, and I remember chatting her up a lot so that she wouldn't notice that I was taking the surface roads and not on the highway. And of course, it takes, you know, not that much longer, surprisingly, but it takes longer. But I could just feel the disdain there was no value of human life on the roads. And it resulted in me feeling extraordinarily anxious. What the book helped me to do was to connect the dots of, this is a grief-related response. All this delayed grieving, all these delayed emotions are coming out in a torrent in a big stream, and I didn't know what to do with them because I had no experience in processing those types of emotions. And so I just had to start giving myself grace, take the highway when I could. If I couldn't do it, don't put any pressure on myself. As I worked through the emotions and as I began to cry, I'd never cried over the loss of these people that I love, that are so important, shaped my life, built into me, and just let all those emotions work out, all of a sudden, the anxiety that was attached to the circumstances of being on the highway and experiencing people's disdain for life, it just didn't hit me as hard because I had processed through the emotions. I felt like, I realized how normal it was to do that. Like I should have done that at each loss, but I just didn't have the tools at the same time or at that time. And also, you know, on this podcast, we don't often talk about general losses. We do focus a lot on the loss of a loved one, but this book, as we do a deeper dive in the spring, it will give us the opportunity to talk about other types of loss. At the same time that all these emotions were coming out, we were, in my mind, losing our family home. My mother has a dementia diagnosis, and she wasn't able to stay in her home. We needed to clean it out and sell it, and there was some relational loss attached to that. And I just felt like I cannot bear another loss. And I think that was the root of the anxiety. And so as we think about anxiety tied to grief, usually it's very easy to identify. It's tied to the loss of a loved one, someone that made us feel safe, someone that we adored, someone that we were doing life with. So that's my story about how I came to uncover this book that has helped me tremendously.
Yeah, I'm excited to get further into that book here in the coming months.
Yep.
As far as anxiety for me and what that looked like, you know, I don't think that I had necessarily struggled much with anxiety leading up to prior to the loss of my sister. And yet I would say I had some anxiety even after my miscarriage. And so, you know, you have little bouts of anxiety here and there, but nothing that I felt like I really struggled with. And yet after my, for those of you that are unfamiliar with my story, I had a sister who struggled with addiction for about a decade, got clean and sober for about 4 years, and then she passed away from complications of a car accident, left behind a four-year-old daughter. And then I also suffered a second trimester miscarriage some years later. And so my stories really look like with my relationship with anxiety was after the loss of my sister and going home to Arizona and kind of being in the grief bubble of the logistics and legal stuff and what have you, it took the shape of phone calls. I'm very close with my family. I have an older sister, Caroline, and then my parents. And so we're all in Arizona together. And if I hadn't heard from somebody in 30 or 45 minutes, I suddenly was like this internal, like, panic, like blood pressure is up. I'm calling 7-8 times in a row. And, you know, my mom would pick up the phone. She's like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, you didn't answer my call. What's going on? She's like, nothing. My phone was in the other room. Like, these were just nothing issues that previously would never even register to me. And so that when I came back to Ohio, it got even worse. You know, I'm calling 15 times in a row, you know, and somebody left their phone at home as a, you know, when they went out. So it was this kind of like irrational need to talk to people all the time. And that was, I mean, it never got to the point where I think it was fully debilitating, but it was taking up a huge mental load for me to the point that it was distracting when I was doing other things of, oh, I haven't heard from my sister in a couple hours. Let me check in with her. You know, just things like that where it was always front and center of really trying to like white knuckle hold on to the people around me. Everybody okay? Everybody good? Mm-hmm. And then what it looked like after my miscarriage was, you know, when I was told I had a miscarriage, I went in, was in my second trimester, and I went in for a routine appointment, a routine ultrasound. At that point, we already had one daughter, and it was a normal and easy pregnancy. So that when I went in, bless her heart, this ultrasound tech, you know, I think I was even on my phone. I was like getting ready for us to start this thing. It was just me. My husband wasn't there. And she's like, I'm so sorry, there's no heartbeat. And she turned the lights back on and started, you know, cleaning the jaw off my stomach. And I had such whiplash from like, what just, wait, what? Put that machine back on, ma'am. you better do that one again. And so it was this really kind of, in the time, it just felt traumatic of how I found out that I had had a miscarriage and kind of just the subsequent series of events. So that when I got pregnant, about a month or two after the miscarriage, that entire pregnancy, I was a mess. I was, you know, every doctor's appointment, you go in with just, dear God, please protect this baby. Mm-hmm. And it was such a, you know, where the previous pregnancies had just been these really joyful, like fun events. We weren't telling people that we were pregnant. We weren't celebrating. It was just this holding your breath. And every day it's like, is today going to be the day? Is it not? And I had complications with that pregnancy following the miscarriage where I had something that was called placenta previa that you can have bleeding. And I was in and out of the hospital a lot. And so it was already this kind of like high trauma. And so for me, anxiety was just peaking everywhere I looked. And for me, when it was at its worst, I was not trusting God. I was not praying over these things that were causing me anxiety. It was really trying to shoulder the weight on my own. And from experience, that took me nowhere. Things got worse. The anxiety got worse. The physical symptoms got worse. And so, you know, by sharing our stories today, I hope one, that you can relate a little bit to some of these, but also that you hear something in the tools that we're talking about and really just kind of better understanding what anxiety looks like coming out of grief and how you can hopefully ease some of those symptoms.
Yes. And if you're starting to think, does this apply to me? There's a couple things to think about. And it's really kind of measuring the difference from before your loss to where you are now. Because anxiety tied to grief is like an incremental change. So if you didn't have anxiety before your loss and now you're experiencing it, some of the things that you might be feeling are like just an overall increase in worry. Just that because of the loss triggers a sense, you know, we feel the loss. We feel the difference in how our life was and how it is now. Kind of a new preoccupation with death and dying. That can be, especially if there are tragic circumstances around the death of your loved one, a sudden new fear of your own health. We become super sensitive when we lose someone to a disease, and we become hyper vigilant to symptoms, and we almost can imagine. And anxiety is really good at exacerbating those feelings and hyper putting them under a microscope. Every physical and physiological feeling feels just out of control. Panic attacks for the first time. Also, just a generalized increase in sadness or depression. Obviously, that's attached to grief, but an increase in anger out of nowhere, explosive type of anger. You know, people manifest anxiety in all kinds of different ways. Some people become very quiet and everything is in their head, and other people, it's very visceral and an outward demonstration of anger. And then sometimes there's a preoccupation with feelings of regret or guilt, repetitive thoughts like woulda, coulda, shoulda done things differently, thoughts playing over and over and over again that we think could potentially change the outcome of our loss. All of these things are kind of an indicator that there could be some anxiety going on.
And one of the things that I love about going through a more detailed list and really being specific about how anxiety looks like is many of you probably have never experienced significant bouts of anxiety. So this could be brand new information for you. And even things like anger, you know, you may not necessarily associate that with anxiety. You think more of the panic attacks and clammy hands, some of the physical symptoms. But the anger is very real. And in that kind of varies from person to person in terms of what manifests for you at the height of anxiety.
Yeah. Anxiety is actually the fear of fear, right? It's the physical feeling of fear tied to being worried about being scared. And it's got layers to it. It's really weird. It's really complex. A lot of the indicators of it, you know, it's built into our neurological system to protect us. But in certain circumstances, just like with our brain, it goes on overdrive. It gets out of control. It's doing way more than the job than it's intended for. So anxiety attached to grief can happen for three different reasons. And there are more, but these are the top three. One is that we're ill-equipped. No one teaches us about grief, and we are all living longer. So quite and strangely, we're experiencing death less frequently than people did before. Like during World War II, people were experiencing death all the time. They were in constant grieving. We're actually getting worse at processing the emotions connected to grief, which is it's a strange circumstance with our extended life expectancy. Number two is that we don't take our time in grief. Most people push themselves to get through their grief as quickly as possible and just get back to their lives, suppressing and avoiding all the emotions that come with loss. There's a great quote in the book that we're talking about today. Grief has its own timeline and its own plan for you. The more you try to wriggle free of its grasp, the tighter it gets. Grief will surface. These emotions will surface. And if we're not proactive about them, it can result in strange anxiety, like my story about not being able to drive on the highway. That's kind of a quirky little way to express what really are the emotions of grief. The third reason that sometimes we experience anxiety tied to grief is that we want to be able to control the uncontrollable. We live in a super high control environment and country. We can regulate everything that we want. We can change and set our settings any way we want them. But we cannot control grief for the loss of our loved one. Death is a very out of control experience. And the intense amount and depth of emotions that come with grief can heighten our sense of fear and danger in the world. All of a sudden, things get really real. And we see things outside of our first world comfort-based environment. Like, oh, wow, death is real. And that shock can set us into a state of anxiety. So when we fail to realize that we're ill-equipped, we fail to take our time to process the emotions of grief, and we fail to control all the circumstances, emotion, and emotions around our loss, everything starts to feel shaky and new and wrong in our minds and in our bodies, resulting in an anxious feeling.
So you're nodding along. You're like, yep, okay, that tracks. Mm-hmm. I got some of that anxiety's mm-hmm. popping off a little bit. So now what, right?
Yes. What do we do?
What do you do?
Well, the most important thing is to give yourself grace and to search for the root and spend a lot of time with God, asking him, Lord, like I had such intimacy with God during this experience of understanding that this anxiety was attached to grief. I felt like he parented me through it. And again, no one teaches us about grief, but I feel like he was giving me a masterclass in this concept of anxiety tied to grief. And it was really, really intimate. And I also was not in the immediate phase of grief. A lot of my losses, there was a lot of time that had gone by. So that might not be as easy for you to do mm-hmm. if your loss has been more recent. Mm-hmm. But give yourself grace is number one. So, and to realize that even though it feels like it, we're really not going to drive off the bridge or do the crazy thing or have a heart attack or throw up in public, whatever your anxious track has you believing, and it will have you believing some crazy things. It's really not going to happen. The good news is that the physiological symptoms typically stop abruptly when we have a revelation of, oh, this is anxiety, when we name it. And if you want a great resource, watch the Pixar movie Inside Out. It is a fantastic, especially Inside Out 2. The character where the young girl, it's a, you know, obviously it's a Pixar movie, so it's animated. But it goes into a deep dive of all of the interior emotions that we experience, and they're each characters. And in Inside Out 2, the character of anxiety is introduced, and it is one of the most accurate depictions. So it sounds strange to watch a movie about anxiety when you're having anxiety, but it does bring, it kind of stops and interrupts your thoughts and makes you realize, oh, this is a thing. Another great resource is a book, and this is a Christian book by author Jenny Allen. Many of you have probably read some of our other books, but it's called Untangle Your Emotions. Our grieving period and our mourning period is a really unique time to become better at processing emotions. If that's not been your strong suit prior to your loss, if you've been someone who kind of avoids emotions, we know from scripture that he's always working everything for our good. Well, what does that look like when you're grieving? Nothing feels good. But actually, it could be a really important time to allow yourself to become more familiar and more kind to yourself in the emotional department. So if you're looking for a good resource, I highly recommend that book as just a general helpful way to process complex emotions.
Yeah. And I would just echo that piece on being able, as these symptoms are popping up or as these thought patterns, this, oh, it's anxiety. You know, it's much like when you are staying at a house for the first time and you're hearing the groaning of the house and you're hearing kind of these small noises. And so suddenly all of our physical radar is up. Right? You hear that kind of soft step. Oh my gosh, is there somebody on the stairs? Is there this or that? And you know, you have those physical adrenaline symptoms of, what is that? And so we stay on that high alert, and anxiety is very much the same way, as opposed to, oh, that's the ice maker in the fridge. It always does this at that time of night. And so that's why we tend to sleep so well in the same area, because we're attuned to those sounds and we just ignore them and we just relax and we just continue sleeping. And so when you are more attuned to some of these symptoms, even something like a panic attack, you know, in just kind of general broad terms, I'm sure that there are outliers here and there's more directed ways to navigate it. But, you know, just being aware as these symptoms appear, right? Let me just take a couple deep breaths. Let me start there and take a little sip of water and let's just see what happens, right? Am I having a heart attack?
Right.
Or am I a little worked up right now?
Yes.
You know, like it sounds pretty simple, but it is a discipline to be able in the moment to self-regulate and really kind of run that physical scan of, okay, let me just check in. How's everything doing? I just came out of this stressful interaction. Let me take a couple of deep breaths. Let me just start there. And so even, you know, in some of our earlier episodes, we talked about like the physiological sigh, like different tools like that, that you can impart in the moment. So the physiological sigh, inhale through the nose, pause, second inhale through the nose, and then a big exhale through the mouth. All it takes is 2 to 3 of those to offload carbon dioxide in our bodies. Essentially, that's our fight or flight symptoms. And so in the moment, that's something really simple that helps you check in with, am I okay? And chances are you are. Okay. Yes. That's great. Sometimes you should go to the hospital. You might be having a heart attack, but hopefully that's not it.
Right. Most of the time.
Most of the time.
It just feels that way.
With an asterisk, not a doctor, you know, yeah. Dr. Kelly and Dr. Megan.
Right.
Nope, not today.
But I love your analogy of sleeping in an unfamiliar space. That is such a perfect representation of what anxiety feels like. Every little thing feels like a threat. And it's because we've lost something incredibly valuable to us, and we don't want to suffer it again. It completely makes sense. It just gets exaggerated, out of control. And so another tool that you can use if you begin to feel anxious in your morning period is to become an observer. In that nanosecond, when you start to feel that anxious feeling, stepping into an observer like, oh, there's that thing again. And literally saying it out loud, like, oh, there's that anxious feeling again. Oh, my stomach feels a little upset. Da, da, da. Becoming an observer rather than a participant. There's literally a gap in there where we can shift our mind into observation mode. And it is unbelievable what happens in our brain. Everything, all of our circuitry begins to work in a different way, in a much more helpful way to us. It's more of your prefrontal cortex. It's your mind of Christ. It's where the good stuff happens. It's where our logic and our reasoning can happen, as opposed to when we're in panic mode, our left and our right brain are separated. There's nothing good crossing those signals, and everything just seems like it's on fire. So just taking that nanosecond to be an observer and state it out loud, it's huge.
Yeah, and in that observer role of the morning period itself, of your thought patterns, mm-hmm. you know, again, that discipline and that restraint of not just indulging in these feelings, because, you know, for some of us, the anxiety becomes a habit. You know, me with the phone calls, and I do mean they were incessant phone calls, it was a habit. And so for me, it was interrupting those patterns, interrupting those habits to really assess, mm-hmm. right? To hit the brakes. It's not always easy. And let me just say, you know, earlier we talked about having grace for yourselves. I know you're not supposed to use the word crazy. Sometimes just get a little crazy and like, you're like, that could have gone better.
Yeah.
And then, but you know, it's like, this is not going to be perfect. This is, you know, these are tools that we hope that you implement to, again, start, let's move this train in the right direction. But, you know, having grace that even if you have these moments where we go off the rails just a little bit, mm-hmm. hopefully it's just a little, that's all right.
It's okay. I give myself grace. Sometimes I'll feel like, I don't think I'm taking the highway today. I think I'm going to give myself a little extra time and I'm just going to go slowly. And that's my self-care in this area. I don't want to feel anxious. I understand what's going on now. I understand that my nervousness on the highway is attached to loss in my life. That I understand it now and I can articulate it. But there's sometimes I'm just not going to put myself through that. I'm just going to take the longer road. And is there anything wrong with that? No, I'll be fine. It's just being kind mm-hmm. to yourself. It's just being sensitive to yourself. And for our friends out there who are highly sensitive people, and that is a thing, if you want to Google HSP, highly sensitive people, you have to be extra kind to yourself. The world is can feel very overwhelming if you're a highly sensitive person. You could be very susceptible to anxiety during grief because, again, it's such a strong and intense spectrum of emotions. And as somebody who's already sensitive, you're going to be extra sensitive in your mourning period. So you're going to have to be even more kind to yourself. So once you uncover, when you begin to uncover, oh, this is anxiety. Oh, this is anxiety tied to grief. Give yourself some workarounds. If there are certain circumstances that are just too much, do the best you can, stop when you can't do anymore. That has helped me a lot. Now I'm jumping on the highway all the time. I'm zipping up 71, zippity-doo-dah all the time. 99% of the time. Every once in a while, it's like, no, I did not today. If I've got something that's on my heart, that's, you know, like I have concern for a friend. I can tell when I'm extra sensitive and feeling extra depth of emotion, that's when it kind of kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I'm different now. I've learned to grieve. I'm a lot more sensitive. I'd rather be this way than I was in the past, which was completely emotionally shut down, zipping up and down the highway.
Yeah. And I think that that's a good reminder that just like grief was with us forever, you know, not as intense. And, you know, we progress into new levels of our grief and new healing in our grief. But anxiety pops up from time to time. I'm 8 years out from the loss of my sister. And, you know, holidays can be really difficult if there's someone who, you know, we have friends who have been sick recently. As we've known other people who have passed away, I find that I kind of circle the wagons with my family and I'll make a few extra phone calls. And, you know, you're just kind of checking in on people. And so some of those old habits and some of those, you know, familiar anxieties do pop up from time to time, even, you know, 8 years later. But going back to Kelly's definition around anxiety is the fear of fear. That is not of God. And I think that it, in my most indulgent moments, and when I say that, you know, of thinking of the anxiety of, you know, sometimes you just really give into it because it feels good. Well, you know, may not feel great having a panic attack, but, you know, as those control mechanisms kick in, there does seem to be a certain level of control. But having the wherewithal to say, this is not what God has for me.
That's right.
This is not of God. And, you know, I don't know what your relationship with God is. And so that might feel like a really foreign concept, especially if you are someone who has struggled with anxiety prior to loss. And so now it is just peaking and hitting new heights of anxiety that might feel debilitating. Let me just encourage you that, like, it starts with God. Like, invite him into that process. Even if you're not sure what your relationship looks like with him, give him an opportunity to intercede on your behalf.
I had to walk the fine line because 2 Timothy 1:7 says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but a power, love, and a sound mind." Well, nothing's more appropriate than that verse to anxiety. And I am a strong believer in Jesus. And so I had to be really careful about self-condemnation. When I was having these anxious thoughts, I knew he was going to lead me out of it. And I also know that he was working things together for my good. And I felt miserable at the same time. So holding all those tensions at the same time, it was an unbelievably intimate time with God because I know that scripture is true. I know I haven't been given a spirit of fear. I know I do have a sound mind. It doesn't feel like it right now. So, okay, God, what are you teaching me? What do I need to know about myself? And what I learned was I am sensitive to anticipated loss. I have to be careful. I have an 83-year-old mother, right? There's anticipatory grief going on because I know she's not going to live forever. And so if I feel anxious thoughts, my first thought now is, what am I anticipating losing? I feel like the Lord has trained me into being sensitive. So being able to attach the connections, make the connections of why am I feeling anxious? What is going on that's bringing this feeling up? It's been an unbelievably intimate time with God. So I would highly encourage, sit down, ask him questions. He loves to answer questions. God loves it when we come to him, just as the good father that he is. God, help me understand this. What are you teaching me? He may be revealing an element to your identity that hasn't been exposed to you yet. I know that sounds strange, but he's always revealing things to us. And grief will change you and bring forth a piece of you that maybe you've never uncovered before.
Mm-hmm. And then the last piece that we have is understanding the difference between regret and guilt.
Mm.
Those are heavy, words.
That's a big one. It's a big one, but it's a great lesson. And because a lot of times guilt can bring anxiety because we can't resolve it, right? Because guilt has condemnation and shame attached to it. That is not of God. In order, if you're feeling guilty, you need to test yourself and say, have I intentionally done something wrong? That's an appropriate time to feel guilt. A lot of times with grief, we are actually feeling regret. Regret brings sorrow with it. Very, very different from shame. Sorrow heals. Jesus was a man acquainted with sorrow. And regret is actually acknowledging that I wish I would have had more information. I did the best I could in the situation. I wish I would have known better. My husband passed away from concussion-related dementia tied to football playing and all that kind of stuff. And I was so ill, I was not equipped. And I have regret. I wish I would have been more equipped. I wish I would have taken the time to research more and to understand what he was going through. I was in survival mode. And so I have regret. Did I do anything intentionally wrong that I should feel guilty over? Of course not. I did the best that I could in a terrible situation with the limited information that I have. Do I have regret? I do. And that makes me feel sorrow. But the comfort of Jesus brings, heals that sorrow. And so that's a really important thing. If you're riddled with guilt over something that's attached to the loss of a loved one, please take the time to go through this exercise with the Lord. And is it really guilt or is it most likely regret?
As we wrap up in this idea of anxiety, whether it's once a week, whether it feels like it's every other minute, know that's not what God has for you, right?
Right.
Give yourself grace. Start there. Even as the physiological symptoms show up sometimes in tandem and there's just a boatload of them coming at you at light speed, taking a moment to say, oh, it's anxiety. And even in some of our earlier episodes, I believe it's Grief 101, where we really kind of talk about the individual symptoms. And let me tell you, friends, it is a list. You might think it's like, oh, it's 10 things. It's like
20.
Yeah, it's a lot.
22.
It's a pretty hefty list. So just kind of being familiar. I mean, for me, that was really eye-opening of seeing even something like anger that we talked about earlier. I always thought it was you're having panic attacks and you're breathing out of a paper bag. Oh, no. There's fatigue. There's numbness. There's different things that show up. So the more that you are familiar with what anxiety looks like, again, I talk a lot about the undercurrent of anger because I couldn't pinpoint it. I wasn't angry about one specific thing. I was just angry about everything. And so, you know, when life looks like it's on fire in enough places, then we start to maybe look inward of like, do I have a part in this? Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, being just familiar with what does anxiety look like so that as those symptoms come up, you can say, okay, hang on. How am I feeling? Let's check in. Just do a light check in, right? Go outside. Let me grab a walk and some vitamin D. Let's, you know, these are small things that can be really just impactful for our parasympathetic nervous system. Become an observer, right? Taking the time to really observe where are you in the mourning period? What's happening with your thought patterns? Are you inviting God into the process? Are you getting into the Bible? Right? That's a manual, friends. That's get in there.
The answers are there.
I promise they are there. And then understanding the difference between regret and guilt. Kelly, anything else to add as this kind of intro into anxiety tied to grief?
No, I feel like we've piqued your interest. And again, we'd love for you to join us after the beginning of the year for some extended episodes in this area. I think we've uncovered something that's a through line in a lot of people that we see and that we work with and that we walk with in our grief support group. And hopefully it'll bring peace to your soul.
And all the books that we mentioned will also be listed in the show notes for this episode. So if you were driving or like, what was the name of that book? Just check the show notes later and they will be there. Thank you so much for joining us again for Surviving Grief. If you have questions, if you need more support, email us. We got our email in those show notes too. We'd love to hear from you, hear your story. And of course, check out our online healing groups as well at crossroads.net. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Surviving Grief is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio. If you'd like to connect or share your own story, reach out to us at podcasts@crossroads.net. That's podcasts with an S at crossroads.net. We'll see you next time.